to Grab Lies, everybody. Thank you for listening. This whole week is going to be a different set of, well, first of all, recordings, because I'm in a hotel room for the Peer Support Group Conference here in San Diego. So lots of great new guests and a lot of collaboration. So my biggest thing is just to bring the community together, learn, and really expand off people's stories, people's experiences, and now we can inhabit with one another and grow together. So just before we get started, everything we say and do does not reflect the City of Los Angeles Fire Department. I have to say that. And also, today's guest, very powerful guest, his name's Nate Nussbaum, and he has a company called MoveMed, and he really is extremely smart on understanding neurology, understanding functional neurology with the body, how it functions, and how our vagus nerve is being stimulated constantly, how we're constantly in fight or flight. A great episode, and his stuff, he's got a ton of videos on his Instagram page, so I'll be sure to put all the links and things like that on his, or for his Instagram, so you can check all this stuff out. But he's really, really great. He worked on my body prior to this, and just a ton of stuff like that was just tense in my neck. He basically just completely released all this tension in my neck that I was carrying and into my, in my head as well from my head injury. So he's very knowledgeable. It was a great episode. Kept it a little short than normal episodes, which is great for people. So check this episode out. It's really amazing. Fascinating conversation with Nate and so forth. So thank you for listening. Take care.
It's time for Grab Lies.
Welcome to Grab Lies, everybody. I'm your host, John Vargas. Thanks for listening, everyone. So today, this is an interesting start for the week. I'm over here at the PSPSA Peer Support Group Conference in San Diego, and I brought all my stuff to the hotel room and having different guests on, and it's going to be a very, very good time. So today I have my buddy Nate, and Nate, what's your last name again? Nussbaum?
You got it.
So Nate Nussbaum has a company called MoveMed, and I ran into him because he was on Jules Horn's Instagram page and doing different stuff with the body, and I was super interested in what he had to offer, so I hit him up, and I was like, hey, man, like I got, you know, body stuff still from my head injury, and sure enough, all his stuff revolves around neurology and from head injury stuff, so Nate's going to talk a little bit more about that and the details on what MoveMed offers and kind of like the intricacies of the body is so bizarre, man, but it's so valuable once we learn and educate ourselves on what it offers and learning about how we can find some type of balance and harmony into our bodies, into our systems and operate at the superhuman state, what we're supposed to be. And, you know, I'm on this path and journey to do that for myself and hopefully do it for other people and be able to educate other people on what's out there besides Western medicine, where there are a lot of dead ends and a lot of things that really just treat the symptoms. They don't treat the basis of the problem. You know what I mean? So anyways, if you don't mind talking about your story, brother, your story of origin, how you came across this path and so forth, bro.
Sure. Well, I appreciate, first and foremost, you having me on. It's been a pleasure to meet you. Glad to work on you directly. MoveMed came to be about 4 years ago. I had my own head injury, so I had my own head trauma. Went through the ringer of MRI, spent greater part of maybe 8 months not really knowing how to rectify things. It brought back a number of symptoms I'd had as a child, so presumably one of the head injuries I had as a kid, which went largely undiagnosed or untreated. So light sickness, sound sensitivity, generally just being uncomfortable in my own skin. And at the time, I was working in a box gym, so it was well lit in a way that the nervous system doesn't particularly like, especially when it's trying to relax, all those overhead fluorescent lights, a lot of clashing of weights. and just the general demand of having to be attentive to other people's lack of body congruence. It was inherently a stressful environment to like re-socialize myself back into. So I had the pleasure of and luck for meeting a couple of dudes that own a gym down here in Point Loma, S10 Fitness, both Chris Daly and Dave Sten. Chris has since passed, but Dave is still running the gym and running it strong. If I were to say anything about that gym, it's that they really do create a space for people who have experienced some type of neurological trauma or some type of general deficit in a system that should be performing certain functions and is not. And they really create a safe space to sort out those problems, come to terms with what issues you may not be able to put language to, and then work it out, whether it be with gym equipment, with some neurological stimulus, a variety of things. So a really tremendous environment to get the ball rolling again. What I took away from that space more than anything else after my head injury was I have a number of skills, so to speak, that I built out throughout my years, whether it be through some like neurofeedback as a child, some sensory processing therapies, or just generally being a like an astutely sensitive nervous system. So putting some names and descriptors to what I was experiencing gave me some clarity on how I could go about treating other people in a similar fashion, not necessarily going about all those neurological tools, but figuring out my own system for approach. I did figure that out, but it's taken me a number of years to put it into text form, which we just came out with our book, Stress to Strong. It's available on Amazon. Feel free to pick it up. Nice. But to the effect of what I've been working on is I've been working on a system that can help people facilitate a lot of the passive benefits of hands-on therapy in a active setting. So how could you work out your nervous system in a way that maybe someone would massage certain benefits into you or create some neural stimulus so that your body can adapt to those stimulus, not necessarily you controlling it. But in our setting, you do it, you control it, you take the benefit from what you've done. And so now we have approximately 100 coaches worldwide. They're on our first level of certification, movement level one. And we're working toward four levels of certification to that effect, where we can really improve people's dialogue with not just the material, but offering greater and greater levels of what I provide personally, what a couple of my coaches provide directly, as they've worked with me directly for a number of years, and they've helped me sort out some of this material. And I genuinely believe that this is going to be the next stage in how people not just manage healing, but manage training, provide real value to all ages. So if it's a child learning how to create the behaviors, if it's an adult learning how to relearn the behaviors, or somewhere in between, I really do believe that movement is the next step in, all right, I'm going to take some independence to my recovery. I'm going to take some independence to my self-learning. And those things provide miles and miles of benefit for someone developing a personality, so to speak, a physical competence, a number of benefits on that end.
Nice, dude. I think, so for me personally, I know I could feel my nervous system has been fried. You know what I mean? And like being fight or flight for a very long time. And part of that is from my injuries I've had, because I've had multiple concussions, and from those concussions caused more of that nervous system dysregulation. And then on top of that, I started adding, you know, stuff from work, you know, just the sleepless nights being assigned to extremely busy assignments where I'm not sleeping ever. You know what I mean? Yeah. And then experiencing hypervigilance where I'm in a state where I have to use my administrative function to be centered and calm in, you know, in a chaotic environment, whether it's on a medical run as a paramedic, whether I'm on a fire, whether I'm supposed to work within a team effort with other people to make sure everyone's in alignment with the common job to get the conclusion finished on an incident, you know, and all of that all together and just in one 24-hour shift can fry someone out normally. But adding all these things together, it was like a synergy effect, you know, and frying me out, you know what I mean?
Totally.
And my body started shutting down on me and then having these experiences, you know, that's why I'm on this path. But it's just, it's valuable when we come across their journey and meeting each other as healers, you know what I mean? Because usually healers are the ones who are hurting the most. And we go through these processes of, you know, figuring it out ourselves, and we're able to help other people and like passing that torch. You know what I mean? That's kind of like my way of walking through this life. And it's not an accident. I just like, you know, walk into certain people who are helping me so I can help others. And it's just how it works. You know what I mean? And kind of talk about your personal head injury. I'm very curious about when you had it and kind of like the experiences you were having, because I know everyone who's had a head injury experiences something that's different, and they call it like kind of an isolated state because no one understands the invisible injury that's going on, because it also depends on where you hit your head and the state you're in prior to that and how it affect your entire nervous system and so forth. You know what I mean?
Totally. Yeah. I wouldn't say that it was anything particularly exciting. I had my old man moment. I closed my hand into a door frame, went into shock for a moment, slipped backwards, hit my head on the table and then the ground. And I'm not sure if I lost consciousness or I'm not sure if I was in and out, but I know that I didn't reset really quickly. I got back up, fell again against the fridge. And then for a while I was just sat there in a cold sweat. So it was like a momentary belief in, did I just risk my life? Did I just cause something that could potentially be a life-threatening moment? Because there was a degree of, not just overwhelm, I'd fallen a number of times, I've hit my head a number of times, but this was particularly compromising. I felt sincerely like I'd lost a number of my faculties in just a moment. And so I'd spent maybe 15 years at that point, trying to resolve some things that had happened, whether they be trauma-oriented emotionally or physically. And I felt really well resolved by that point in time. And then just like that, reset back into a position where now I have way more responsibilities. Now I have to go to work tomorrow. Now I have my dog. And I have absolutely no idea how I'm going to improve upon my life the way I was intending to, with this level of motivation, this level of focus, this level of purpose. And so it was a real break in my normally stoic disposition, a break in my normal confidence and ability to just run through the wall, which I'm sure you're literally familiar with.
Yeah.
And I took a new look at myself. I mean, I literally would go, I went to the gym one time, and this was while I was working. I saw myself in one of the many mirrors on the wall, and I was like, whoa. I saw myself as bigger than I'd ever seen myself. And I didn't grow by any means, but I had seen a non-altered or non-adjusted version of myself, or a new perspective rather. And in that perspective, I was like, okay, my body's bigger than I thought it was. I'm larger than I thought I was. And to that effect, it was kind of relieving to the effect that maybe my own self-impression or my own limited valuation of myself was by nature a huge limiting factor on how much I could self-perceive or like generate out of my life. And so I really took it. I took that initiative from that point on to be, all right, I want to get myself back to where I thought I was motivation wise. I want to value myself the way I did before, but I don't want to be a hiccup or a speed bump to my own lifestyle in a way that I'm self-depreciating or taking away some of my own value by saying these things in my head about myself or about other people. And so I took a huge 360 about my life, which had me doing some very weird physical things. Like, I'm not sure if you're familiar with rope flow. That was one of the things that I tried out. Just a very cyclical movement of throwing a rope around like jump rope, but not jumping the rope. Among a number of other things that were more flowy than they were actionable, because I was very into lifting. And so I got myself to a point where I was realizing the real value about movement was to stimulate my brain, to make my brain feel like it valued the world. And among that, sorry, just one second, the dog's pulling.
He brought his dog too, so she's just laying down on the ground here.
Just trying to pull the headphones out of off my head. One of the main things that was super helpful was my relationship with her at the time, because I was devoid of a lot of relationships that I would otherwise, I think, be able to rely on at that age. My dad's been in a different state for a while. My mom passed when I was young. And a degree of that wanting to find comfort that I feel like that my my state of mind had needed at the time was lacking. So her and I really bonded, and I went to the beach every day with her. So the ocean, just in its many natural benefits, was hugely healing for me. But not just that, going underwater, submerging my head, which you'd think oxygen deprivation is probably the last thing you need after a head injury. But by nature, it was the thing that just started making me be a little more acute in my head. I thought faster again. I was able to perceive things a little more happily instead of feeling groggy in my own mind. And so a year of going to the ocean, putting my head underwater, and generally being able to offload a lot of physical tension, being around the negative ions or whatever it may have been at the time, it changed my life. So from there, I started to build a business that was a little more mindful about, okay, these are some values that do actually create a tremendous takeaway. You can change someone's life in a moment if you give them the right stimulus. That said, you can change someone's life forever and change their trajectory forever if you give them the right tooling to help themselves. So with the help of my buddy Chris at S10, especially his motivation to be like, dude, you've got something here. You run with it. I did. I ran with it. And so 4 years later, I've got 100 people plus that are working with me or working in some faculty around my brand, and they're making their business very largely dependent on the materials that I've taught them, which is a very cool feeling. But more than that, it's a good segue into understanding that there's so many people who are similarly afflicted, and maybe they don't have the words to describe how they could help themselves or previously didn't have those words.
Nice, dude. I think they call that self-realization. You're looking in the mirror, you know, like I've had so many of those, but you know, they could happen in an instant, yeah. You know, and like in ancient Chinese culture, they call it Satori. You know, it's a Taoist term. Like Satori is an instant self-realization method to yourself of just, it's an instant moment and you're able to almost level up your consciousness. And now you're operating off a different plane of consciousness mm-hmm. through that Satori moment. And there's levels of those Satori moments as we like expand our life and we start inhabiting our journey. And that's what this is all about, is like our journey of life, you know, and I experienced so many of those. And a lot of times pain is what caused me to go more and further into that Satori self-realization moment, you know?
Yeah.
And unfortunately pain has been one of my greatest teachers, you know, it leads me into different directions and it takes me to moments where, you know, I'm just gripping in pain and just, you know, I want to give up. And then I realize I don't have the resilience to move beyond that pain or the suffering of whatever it is. And it takes me deeper into like my spiritual being. It also takes me deeper into my emotional self and I'm able to move forward. You know what I mean? I think all of us can experience that. And I think through head injury stuff is different, I think, because the nervous system is dysregulated or it's off and out of balance. And so it's hard to maneuver around that one because it you're doing everything you can do, but the nervous system's still meeting roadblocks, you know, in the body or whether through the way it's running up and down the spinal cord, through whether it's stuck in the head, whatever it is, you know what I mean? So we did some work, like an hour or so before we even recorded here. And just the stuff, dude, that you were doing to just like the base of my skull, my neck was pretty tremendous. You know, it was like, and also the practice of like negative and positive pressure, the way I'm plugging my nose and things like that is just bizarre, mm-hmm. but I can feel there's a tremendous release. And intuitively, like when I'm doing it, I am closing my eyes and I can almost visualize the negative pressure when I'm using that piece. I think that's why I was having some more positive effect when you're pushing onto my neck or into my head or whatever it is. It was pretty interesting, dude. And this is not the first time I've heard about the atmospheric pressure and the positive or negative pressure inside the body and how it functions. So I do want to hear a little bit more about that because it's so educational to understand the pressure in the body and what's happening when we have atmospheric pressure kind of pressing outside the body as well, and how we're inhabiting on this, you know, bubble of life. Totally. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. So I would say that it all starts in utero. We start in a half atmosphere of pressure. So in our mother's womb, it's 0.5 atmospheres. And while we're in there, we're not breathing air. We're being fed through the umbilical cord. But What we're doing as far as learning to create and pressurize our system is we're drinking in or breathing in fluid. So the amniotic fluid is something that we'll inhale and we'll swallow continuously. And by nature of that, we start to expand and create some pumping sensation, whether it be our lungs, them developing, whether it be our gastric system developing. Everything that is involved in that effort of creating what I call motility, or what is called motility, is a byproduct of that pressure value. So moving fluids, being able to hold fluids, being able to hold pressure, being able to move pressure. By nature, a negative pressure moment is every inhale, and a positive pressure moment is an exhale, or laughing, sneezing, farting, pooping, everything that is by nature pushing into that belly and making us essentially move our own fluids is largely a Valsalva or positive pressure moment. So what many people have issue doing is creating a more robust positive pressure. And I think it's a byproduct largely of a lacking opposite. So there's this nature in breath work, be it oxygen advantage or really many of the primary sources of breath work at present, is to focus on the exhale. And there's a large portion of that that relies directly on the nervous system's correlation between exhalation and flexion. And so when you exhale and flex, or you flex, you're creating a degree of stability. And the nervous system thrives off stability, and that if it knows something is going to be managed, if it knows something's going to be stabilized, it may take some luxuries. Or as a byproduct of the stability, it may feel a little bit more secure, a little more firm. My thought is that the reflexes of the system, once they're really well established, don't require extra stability. You'll be able to just push yourself through whatever event you're going through or exercise you're going through, and you'll be able to get some real value out of that without having to hold on to yourself. The issue is, so many of us are already holding on to ourselves that the mirrors that we're watching, that are teaching us, the people that we're around and we're engaging in a conversation with or relationship with, are already holding themselves to a substrate of their personality, a substrate of their physical capacity, and then we learn the same behaviors. So the way that like a dog moves, for example, wide-eyed, big smile on their face, or like the wide open, like that kind of thing is not being done typically with reservation. It's like full embodiment. They're excited to do it. They'll sprint at the new person. They'll sprint at the ball. And they'll keep doing it until they realize, oh, my body can't do this anymore. Not because they're like, I'm bored of this, but typically because their body can't do it anymore. They've run the course of things. We typically create some mental image in our head or some story that's saying, I don't want to do this anymore because of this. I can't do this anymore because of this. And we stop ourselves prematurely. My thinking is that we can go a lot farther and excite a lot more. That is, if we train a proper and adequate vacuum, a proper and adequate negative pressure. It's not just the belly breathing, but that's that breath into the nose. That's that ability to draw pressure into the face, because the first two things that create sensation while we're in womb are our nose and our lip area. So essentially the two places that feed us either oxygen or food. And so breastfeeding, a large portion of the quality of breastfeeding, suckling and creating that vacuum in the mouth, eventually teaches us how to chew. And then the chewing feeds into that positive pressure capacity for us to push digestive food into our digestive system and start to move it out of us. If we don't build out this quality of negative pressure, then we're not going to be able to self-soothe very well. So the swallowing capacity, that vagal nerve stimulus, that thing, that same nerve that's going to feed into our heart, feed into our gut. If we don't have that communication channel, then we don't really socialize with ourselves. So there's a quality of needing to brace to be able to feel the areas that our nerve isn't perceiving, that nervous complex isn't perceiving. So to the end of all that, the positive and negative pressure balance is huge. I'm not saying just breathe, 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 and then don't exhale as much. What I am saying is practicing that vacuum, practicing the swallow, practicing those mechanisms that help us create a more robust inhale and an easier swallow are going to go so far towards relaxing you in a way that exhalation will not. And so I came up with a number of maneuvers, so to speak, and the vagal and Valsalva the Valsalva and the Mueller are already vagal maneuvers. They're not something of my invention. But the ways that we employ them are to the degree that we're going to improve upon how you digest food. We're going to improve upon how you breathe air. And then long term, we'll improve upon how you build your neck. We'll improve upon how you build your jaw, how your skull starts to expand again. So maybe you've seen some of the videos or pictures on my page of like mewing changes where someone goes through a full cranial change or neck change or body change. And it's largely because they reorient their pressure values and really change how their body relates to nose and mouth. And then that relates to positive and negative pressures.
Some wizardry right here, dude.
That's what I'm going for.
It's cool, man, because I think we're getting out of the context that, you know, we're trusting the body more. And I love how you say embodiment, you know, and like we're looking at animals and like, how are they functioning within this positive pressure negative and like how they co-inhabitate to nature.
Totally. Well, and she's a little gassy right now.
But in general though, like, you know, like for me, I have cats at home and I just do, sometimes I'll just sit there and like watch them and how they move and how they're maneuvering and such gracefulness and effortlessness. And I'm like, dude, I want to move like that. You know what I mean? And it seems so like we're going to the basics now. We've, for some reason, we've extracted ourselves outside of nature and how things are designed to be into this idea that we're better and bigger than that. And I think that's where the misconception is that we have to actually come back to the quality of what nature offers and the lessons it provides for us and how we can work within this field and actually function within it rather than trying to cut something open and take it out or give you a pill and expect you to now adjust to this pharmaceutical to now, you know, expect the results, right, that are long lasting when we can trust our body, our systems, and allow that to actually take its more natural form in order for you to have long lasting mechanisms to make you a superhuman, to where you can do things beyond the capacity, beyond your belief systems, what you do, you had never had a thought before. You know what I mean? So Absolutely. One of the things I think we had kind of talked about, and I've gone down my own path with, you know, studying ancient Chinese medicine and working with a Qigong master and understanding lymph and understanding these systems, like no one ever talks about it. You know what I mean? And even understanding Ayurvedic medicine and how we have these elements to our system and how we're supposed to be operating within the elements. And so all these things I've been learning over the last, I would say almost 10 years now, has really kind of gratified to this moment where now I'm really having an expert opinion on how the body's functioning in balance. That's what we normally want to come back to, the middle point or the center. And my biggest thing is I've just started to re-educate myself on lymph, and necessarily more on oil based, how there's oils and specifically like coconut oil, how you can do oil pulling to your teeth and remove cavities and all these things where you don't even have to go to a dentist, make your teeth white, and like things like castor oil, where it's pulling the lymphatic drainage and pulling out these toxins to the surface of the body. And so it's really fascinating how lymph doesn't have a pump to it necessarily. You know what I mean? It's kind of like a passive flow to it. And if you don't get the lymph moving, then it can get stuck and things can get now calcified even if you have, and then build up scar tissue and things like that. So I'm super fascinated about lymphatic system right now in this moment. And then we were talking about it a little bit, and I'm very curious on what you kind of are understanding when you're working on people, when you are looking at the lymphatic system as well, when you're kind of maneuvering the nervous system around muscle tissue and kind of taking everything as a whole rather than like, oh, it's just nervous system or it's just this. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's a passive pump, so to speak. So we've got our heart, we've got our lungs. Those are active pumps. And just by way of us being a self-contained body, or rather skin kind of contains everything in the inside, everything's prevented from leaking out. There's a degree of, if we can't create that motility I was talking about, how we, by nature as a infant, we were pulling in that fluid, and that fluid was helping us push our lungs, push our heart, push our digestive system. If we don't grow into that motility, that is, as an old person or as we age, we don't have that capacity, then we're going to become fibrotic. We're going to become very, we're going to have a lot of like lymph stasis, which is to say, because we're not creating adequate friction against ourselves, we're not draining the sponge. The sponge is just accumulating a lot, and then it becomes something that we have to move around. So it's why a lot of people you'd see walking with some weird kind of body language around their gut or weird body language around their trunk. Sympathetics by nature, we're saying fight or flight, are going to hold you, constrict you, make you smaller, and they're going to either heighten your sensitivity or reduce your sensitivity, but either which way, specific to your case, you're going to experience a less reflexive environment that means something as a byproduct of what you feel on a daily basis. I feel less, okay, I'm not feeling any issues. I feel more, there's seriously some issues. Let's attend to it. Let's hyper-focus. Let's get really into it. And at the end of the day, things should be reflexive. Just like the lymph system, it should be a reflex of, I'm moving around well, my motility is good. And that's not mobility or flexibility. That's that baseline of being able to slide and glide against ourselves without creating an abundance of inflammation. So most of us, because we're not creating that movement really well, we got a bunch of waste in our gut. We got a bunch of things that aren't moving out of our system really well, and so we have to sweat them out, and that's why a lot of people have like yellow stains under their armpit as opposed to them being clear. That's why a lot of people would have very acidic saliva, and we don't create enough swallowing, we don't create enough sweating, or we create too much sweating. At the end of the day, it's a byproduct of a balance. And if that balance isn't reflexive, if it's not something that we get as a benefit of our proactive attempts at like a healthy life, then we're having to fight our own system. And as soon as we fight, we're in sympathetic state. We're getting ourselves to be, I don't like that feeling. Let's stop that feeling. But what that really means for like a biomechanical model or like a movement model is that our arms and our legs start to take over. So we start to arbitrate that the spine moves as a byproduct of how the tensions of our limbs start to move. And the real problem there is that the tensions we build there are just going to increase our sympathetics because we're reducing blood flow back to the heart. And if the blood flow back to the heart's reduced, then the amount of friction to our diaphragm or our gut or our lungs is depreciated in a way that would be of benefit to us. So many of us are getting stuck in this self-restricted environment. And the only way out of it is learning how to let go, not just of like mental things, but physically let go. And it's super hard to learn to physically let go if, say, you have an injury and you don't know how to absolve that injury and you keep fixating and fixating and fixating. And then when you move, it hurts. Well, you have to hold on to that. You have to prevent that from being hurt if you want to go through your daily life, if you want to get through things and you're like, I can't be accountable to this right now. I need for this to work for me. I can't work for it. Which is where a lot of people are, because they don't know where to go with it. They know where to get a pill. They know where to go to get ask questions and maybe them not be answered. But they don't know where to go to help themselves. And so, like you were saying, the traditional Chinese medicine or degrees of ancient practices are hugely impactful in that they create a degree of independence. Like you can go, maybe you won't know how to do everything, but you're starting to learn, oh, this is how I could relate to this environment. This is how I could relate to this deficit. And I think it's a beautiful thing to have that, but we've gone so far in the opposite direction that we don't even have an idea for how to go back to it, which is, it's sad because children are in that state to begin with, to a degree. They're ready to explore their vulnerabilities and test their wants and test their needs in a way that's not going to compromise their system and limit them unless they get injured, unless they like learn from someone else. They're going to keep doing it just like a dog. Like they're going to be excited. They're going to go until they fail. And then after they fail, they're like, I have no idea why I stopped, but I feel good about having done the thing. So the end-all be-all there is that sympathetics, that holding pattern that we all chronically walk around with, is limiting our ability to move fluids on our centric body. And so that includes a lot of that lymph, because most of our lymph is caught in that midline. Mm-hmm. Like our neck has a ton of lymph.
Yeah.
And you might notice how tight this shirt is around my collar, because when I first got these shirts made, or generally when I first got a bunch of my shirts, movement shirts made, my neck was much smaller. But in the process of deloading a lot of my stress, returning a lot of that blood to my trunk, my neck and my upper body has started to fill out above my shoulders, wherein most people will find themselves breathing worse or getting really tight in their throat. It's gone the exact opposite direction. It's just filled out really wonderfully. It starts to lift up my lungs a little bit. I can do that negative pressure a lot better. There's a plethora of benefits that I think are just really wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, you're when you're taking your body out of stress, and now the body's starting like, oh, let's actually maneuver and start to function better, and starts transforming.
Totally.
You know, in natural form. You know, and we start to trust the body now again, and we've lost this capacity to even trust our bodies. Like we don't even feel worthy of trusting our bodies, and that's where like a lot of the chronic pain and stuff kind of starts to generate, and it's a slippery slope from there. It's like a snowball effect.
Yeah.
And you know, I think one of the main concerns for me is this podcast is kind of focused on, you know, mental health, but the chronic pain epidemic that has just gone rampant in America is insane. And specifically for even like first responders and veterans, like they want to be able to have things paid for. You know what I mean? If you're going through workers' comp, it's an injury on the job, or if you're going to the VA, and they're constricted on what that offers, because most of the time, like I was telling you that story, that his doctor just gave me a prescription for Zoloft, you know, for my head injury. I was like, dude, fuck you, man. Like, that's not how this works. Like, I know myself, I know medicine, you know, probably better than you do. You're just prescribing medication. And it's just insane how this chronic pain epidemic doesn't get resolved, you know? And I think a lot of people are seeing this now more so with diet. You know, they're seeing how we're being poisoned basically by all these chemicals sprayed on our crops. So I think we start there as a collective of people in America to see, hey man, most of these chemicals are illegal in other countries. But it's a whole totality of all of it. You know, it's not just one answer, but we come into our body and understand some of these systems that are kind of maneuvering together. You know, like I know in Chinese medicine, they do dry brushing for lymphatic. You know, they will dry brush before they go in the shower because it's actually moving with that passive flow with the brush. It's moving on top of the skin, and if you're getting that flow, if you're going out under the armpits and things like that, brushing towards the area of the heart.
Yeah.
If it's down towards the legs or in your groin area, now you're getting that lymph flow and it's not so congested. And like, I think a lot of lymph congestion causes a lot of immune dysregulations, and people get sick easier and things like that. And that drainage needs to happen some way or another. And so if you don't do it, then it's going to get stuck. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely right. I think that one of the main things that you can look toward for a really good lymph solution is a guy on Instagram, Dr. Perry Perry Nicholson. I always get that one weird. He's called Stop Chasing Pain. It's a really tremendous page for learning about how to manually interact with the lymph. And I mean, there's a bunch of TCM that does it as well, but I'd say that if you wanted to look at a more modern and clinical approach to it, Dr. Perry Nicholson is a great reference.
I think I've seen that guy.
Yeah, he's rad. That said, the have-all-be-all of my system comes around with the, like I said, the vagus nerve earlier. If we're talking in terms of value for how to relate to things, how to understand things, how to communicate with ourselves or with others, we're looking at the vagus nerve and how it represents certain qualities of, I see that in myself. I can, that is, if I'm speaking to myself or I'm looking at someone else, I can see some of their behaviors being corollary. And I think something that a lot of people in your profession experience is that when they go around to people who are not first responders, who don't experience the amount of trauma you guys do just for work, like whether it be you show up to an accident, whether it be you show up to a fire, whether it be you're just generally around a number of people who are sleep deprived and they just came back from one of those aforementioned things, you're essentially experiencing a high degree of like threat and essentially what could be communicated as pain in the nervous system because it's so high pacing that if you don't see that in other people, it's really hard to trust that person's going to understand you. Mm-hmm. And so if it's not something that being communicated in some fashion, or if it's even worse so, there's some pity or there's some kind of like, I wish I understood how you felt, but I want to know more about that, and you don't even want to talk about it, then there's a degree of just like, we're not going to be friends, we're not going to be on the same page, we're not a mirror for each other. And I think that's a thing that's hugely a deficit for a number of people who are first responders, or if they're in some kind of trauma-oriented profession, is that the amount of stress you undergo or you experience other people undergoing is something that most people will not experience in their lives. And as a byproduct, it's hugely hard to relate to that person sitting across from you, whether it be someone who knows a lot. In my case, like, I can talk about a lot of these things, but I don't know what it's like to be in your profession. Mm-hmm. And to that effect, it requires maybe some head injury, or it requires some type of trauma that we're like, okay, I can kind of see where we're both sitting in the same chair, but maybe not all the time. And if that's not something that's made easy, especially for someone who's not super socially aware in that respect, then in your shoes, it could be really hard for someone to like, all right, I'm going to make some changes and I'm going to be able to see these changes through, and they're going to be worthwhile because I know what's on the other side of them. They're probably just going to keep pushing through that wall, hoping that one day they figure it out for themselves in a way that no one else would be able to figure out unless they're in their shoes. Mm-hmm. And so that degree of self-induced trauma or self-induced stress is a part of what we call social engagement factors or social engagement system. Whether it be how your eyes create stability or your breath is consistent or your heart rate variability, the things that you may not necessarily notice consciously, but you pick up on because you're interacting with the person. And if those gestures or if those experiences or if those really like very subtle perceptions aren't easily understood, or if they're perceived as threat, then the likelihood is that person's not going to be someone that you create a mirror with or you create a normal social experience with. And so the problem with that is that most people are living a very lonely life because they don't think anyone gets them. They don't feel like they can be understood, and they don't understand how they could make that relationship more substantial. And so they'll go to a therapist, they'll talk it out. But similarly, there's those social engagement points. You're not seeing someone across from you who's like, I understand what you're saying, or maybe they do understand what you're saying, but they've not been in that position. There's some degree of that division, unless you get a really great relationship out of that. More often than not, you're going to be experiencing someone who's not only not a mirror for you, but someone who can't understand what it is that you need in that respect. Mm-hmm. So I would say that a large portion of what we could all do to benefit ourselves in that respect is pretend like you don't have any of the issues or the special circumstances, and try to relate to the person across from you. Try to see where you are the same. And if you can see where you are the same, because maybe there's very few points to share, then you'll probably start to understand, oh man, this person's suffering from a couple of things, and maybe those things aren't as big in my mind if I were to experience them, but I could provide them a little relief, or I could provide them a little bit of comfort by just being here and showing them a smile in a setting where they may not be able to smile. And those things go a long way to teach people how to self-recruit those social factors, those, okay, I can be around this frequency of intensity, or I can be around this frequency of sadness, or whatever it may be. Matching vibe, so to speak.
Yeah, I think that's one of the ebb and flows of, like, I know for my life is kind of having to adjust from those states.
Totally.
And it's exhausting. You know what I mean?
I can only imagine, yeah.
Like, because I'll have to, let's say my last run I had at work was at like 7 a.m. and I had to come home and learn how to talk to a 9-year-old girl, you know, like, and adjust my enactment with this from one different human being to another human being, and one that I really care for, you know what I mean? And I'm teaching how to learn about life and those things, and how I don't react to my own insufficiencies to make her feel a certain way. You know what I mean?
Totally.
And so it's a very interesting thing. And then relationships, you know, like going into my relationship with Haley, like, and I'm trying to connect with her, like, if I'm so numb and I can't even connect to her on an emotional level, like, this relationship, we're gonna meet blockades, we're gonna fight, and it's gonna go downhill. So we have all these like higher rates of divorces with police officers and firefighters and like,
yeah,
and military. It's like, we understand why, because you're fried out, dude. How can you connect when you're just like completely numb, walking around like a zombie? Like,
absolutely,
it's not gonna happen. So learning these types of tricks to kind of like reset the vagus nerve. And I look into so many different things to reset my vagus nerve as much as possible, because I know I have more awareness and education around it. Like, one of my favorite ones is just laying next to a wall and putting my feet up, and just doing like slow breath work for about maybe 5 to 10 minutes. You know, like, that resets me for about most of my day if I do that halfway through my day after walking all day. And then also I'm just like constantly thinking, and it just really helps. And that's just a simple practice I can do, and it's relaxing. You know what I mean? That's one of the benefits, is like you feel good
totally
in your skin. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Hugely important. Well, we jumped into a bunch of stuff where I was working on you today, but like I said, I would send you a couple of videos and some things that would be some like education pieces that you can work on yourself and find some value on your own time. Majority of the workouts that I teach on the lower levels of certification, so like the level one certification that we have, is teaching people how to manage around building a higher threshold of vagal, not sensitivity, but like coordination. We want to feel like we have a higher threshold of stress tolerance, capacity to manage stress, a capacity to like coordinate through stressful environments, even if they're unfamiliar. And I'll often find a message in my inbox saying, I've never been able to do this before, or this is the first time I was able to. And they're all subjective experiences. It's not like they're walking around and finding their knee bending as much. You'll find physical benefits for sure out of a lot of our stuff, but it's like I was able to take a deep breath while I was experiencing a lot of this stress at work, or while I was doing something that in my fight or flight response would typically throw me out of the way. And we have a number of first responders that have done MoveMed. And the real value is at the end of the day, them taking that perspective of being like, oh, I could be present right now. I don't have to go back to my woo-saw mode and like calm down. I don't have to put my legs up on the wall, for example. I have this threshold of comfort that I could go a little bit longer, and maybe I'm going to get to do that a little bit later. I'll put my legs up and chill and just take my mind out of things. But the capacity to be able to tolerate more things and feel like, oh, I don't have to reset. I don't have to reorder things. My goal is with a lot of this stuff is to teach people, especially children at a later point, is to teach people how to create a underlying personhood. So not just their physical body, but their mental response to things, to be like, let's do this. Let's see what I'm made out of. And be excited about the threat in a way that they can be like, this is going to be a workout. It may be hard. I got 10 reps in front of me. I'm going to get 12. I got 10 reps. I can only hit 8. I'm going to enjoy this 8. And that quality of being able to get through those reps in life or in social circumstance or work is going to be hugely rewarding for someone who's like, I didn't know I could do these things. So a number of the workouts that I'm going to send you, and I'm excited to talk to you about them as we're getting more couple of workouts in or so, whatever, while you're doing it on your own, is how you feel like you're responding to yourself after the fact. If you feel like you're engorging, oh man, I didn't know these muscles would build. I didn't know that this would be something that I would have as a benefit of just putting weight on my chest, like deep pressure therapy, one of our mainstays, or kettle feet, like I was talking to you about, or belted breath work, or laying on one of those like small plush toning balls. At the end of the day, one of these things that you do, or maybe all of them, are going to start to feel like, wow, I didn't know that it was this resource in my body to feel so invigorated, to feel so excited about being relaxed. And so there'll be a threshold where you're like, oh, I can achieve performance without having to flip the switch and just go full attack mode.
I love that, dude. It seems so functional and practical. And that's the kind of the whole thing, is like, things should be effortless.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And we're supposed to glide. That's why I always like am fascinated by these cats I have in my house, because totally. They can just from one part in the ground, they can just expand and jump like super crazy. High in the air. It's insane, and like flex all their muscles in an instant. It's crazy, man. But and one of the things is like, you know, there was a study done on like brain scans of someone who had blunt brain trauma and then someone who had like severe sexual trauma at a younger age. And those brain scans were exactly the same.
Yeah.
And it's just, it doesn't have to be necessarily blunt trauma to the head where you're having nervous system dysregulation. You could have an emotional trauma or an emotional wound that creates this fight or flight response that damages, or let's say brings some type of imbalance to the brain. Absolutely. And it's insane how you can see that. And so PTSD can cause some of these issues as well. It doesn't have to be just blunt head trauma. So learning about nervous system regulation and being able to now operate from a state of being relaxed and feeling comfortable in those moments, because that's kind of where the art is finding that balance in those states. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree with you. It's all up to us at the end of the day. I mean, even if we need the help, if we don't wake up committing to ourselves, knowing that, hey, what I'm going to do or what I'm going to say about myself or what I'm going to believe about myself is going to make a difference, then there's no chance you're going to be better. You might find some improvement, but you're going to wake up feeling like that diagnosis is your identity, or you're going to find that limitation is your identity. And the amount of people that are growing up right now, like, it's popular to be, I'm diagnosed like this, or I'm diagnosed like this, or this is my identity. And like, okay, yes, this is something that you'd want to say about yourself if we asked. But at the end of the day, stop providing it like it's your face. Stop providing it like it's the clothes on your body. Be clear on what it is that you are as a person. Awesome. But if you feel like that's the thing that you need to get out of the way for someone to interact with you, then you're putting your stressors, your burdens into someone else's space who doesn't understand what it is, doesn't know how to interact with it. And by nature, you've kind of like imparted upon them, we're not going to socialize naturally. There's something that I have to create meaning for that you have to understand in order for us to be able to relate. And as a byproduct, we get stuck. And so that's what a lot of people are putting themselves in the position of. I identify as these things. And if you don't recognize that, we're not going to be able to connect. Yeah, because that's not a natural way of connection.
I'll have to close on that, man.
All good.
All right, brother. Well, dude, thank you so much, man, for just everything, man. I'd learned so much already just by talking to you, man. And you know, if someone wants to find you and connect with you, how do they do that?
So we got the website, movemed.net. We're about to put out a new form of the website in a couple of weeks, I hope. We got some people working on it, but it's still up and running. So if you want to check out some stuff, check it out there. Shoot me an email at nathan@movemed.net. Or check us out on Instagram, and that's __MOVMED__. I wish it was just MoveMed, but some guy who's not using his page is MoveMed.
Got it, man. Well, thank you so much, brother. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Appreciate it. Always like and subscribe to Grab Lies Podcast so other people can get the algorithm submitted to them some way, somehow. All right, everyone. Thank you so much for listening.
Appreciate you for having me, man.
Oh, yeah, brother. Thank you for coming.
It was fun.